Good evening, everybody. Welcome to part four of Hilchos Muktzah. We're actually, I think, over the halfway hump. We are finishing off what is considered a Muktzah, and hopefully in the next week or two, we're going to get to the most exciting part, which is going to be how can I actually move all those things that we learned until now are Muktzah. So that's going to be hopefully next week or 2 weeks from now. Let's finish off the different categories of Muktzah. We talked the first night, we talked about kli shemalachta laheter, like a chair, like a broom, and we said the things that you can move, that just regular kelim that aren't mukta at all, we said if you move them for no reason at all, that's not good. That was the first point. The next point we said was kli shemalachta laiser, something that you use, the utensils that you use normally for doing things that are prohibited on Shabbos. Those, what's an example of that? Kli shemalachta l'iser? A hammer, Kli shemalachta l'iser. Scissors. What else, what? Cell phone. Remote control. Fan. Alarm clock. Those are all things that you can't, of course, they're mukta, but you can move them if you either need their location or you need not to be in their location. Alternatively, because you want to use them for an alternate use, like the umbrella to use as a cane. I saw somebody this week and he had injured his leg playing football on Sunday morning. So I told him, you could walk with an umbrella on Shabbos because of this halacha. Then we talked about last week, Muktzah Machmas Gufa. Muktzah Machmas Gufa, we defined as something that is not a kli at all. It's not a utensil. It's just a mass. A mass. And it's such a kind of mass that doesn't have any purpose for use on Shabbos. For example, a rock, a stick, a clog of dirt, a bucket of paint. And we also said, very importantly, frozen meat, meaning uncooked raw meat, raw fish, unless you eat sushi, in which case it won't be. Raw chicken. I never heard of chicken sushi. Probably doesn't taste so good. We also said noodles. That's probably the most common in terms of halacha lemaaseh. If my raw noodles are in the pantry, I cannot push it aside to reach the Cheerios behind them. Let's finish off with one point about Muktzah Machmas Gufa. Yes. Raw butternut squash. So raw butternut squash. Let me ask you a question. Would it be edible for an animal who lives in Washington Heights? I mean, there are no cows around here. So I guess that would be the question. If animals, whatever kinds of animals we have in Washington Heights, let's call them dogs and large cockroaches, if they are unable to consume raw butternut squash, then it would be muktzah machmas gufa, like a raw potato, and you cannot move it, even if you needed the space, even if you needed to access something behind it. If, however, a dog would eat it, a cat would eat it, or a large cockroach would eat it, then it would be really appropriate, it would be not muktzah at all, because it's edible for animals. So let's talk about two situations that I can make something that's muktzah machmas gufa into being allowed to be used, into being mukhan, which is the opposite of muktzah. Who here has a pet? At home or in their apartment? Okay, who here has ever had a pet in past tense? Okay, who here has had a pet rock? No one had a pet rock? What? I thought everyone was going to raise their hand for this. A pet rock? You never had a pet rock? You know, in third grade, you take a rock in school, you paint a smiley face on it, and you glue some felt on the top like a baseball hat or a keeper or something. A pet what? Water balloon, that would I guess be the same. A pet rock actually is not going to be muktzah. How come a rock is muktzah and a pet rock is not muktzah? Because you adopted it, of course. So how do you adopt something? When you designate anything that is muktzah machmas gufo for a designated purpose, that's going to alter it. Let me rephrase it. There are two ways to make something that's muktzah machmas gufo, a rock, to be able to be used on Shabbos. One is to alter it, to paint it, to glue something on it that makes it look pretty. That's one way. The second way is to designate it for the purpose of permitted use. For example, This is a joke. It's not funny, but it's sort of funny anyway. Let's say you're one of those people that think that it's appropriate to throw rocks at cars that drive on Shabbos. So my personal opinion is that's not a good idea. I think it's better to throw either kishka, chalent, kugel, throw kisses. That might work more effectively. As the Chazon Ish writes, when you're dealing with people who don't, unfortunately, aren't raised to know what Torah and mitzvahs are, so you should rope them in cables of love. So you should throw kisses at them, throw Hershey's kisses at them, not rocks. But if a person would want to throw a rock at whatever, so the way they would halachically deal with this situation of mukhs is they would have to designate these rocks, but carefully, not just I want to throw these rocks on Shabbos, but I'm designating these rocks, Erev Shabbos, to forevermore be my anti-Chilul Shabbos tools, or something like that. And again, I'm just giving that as a cute example, not that I'm in any way advocating that. In fact, I am condemning that, just for the record. But let's give you another more common example. Is dirt muktzah? Dirt is very muktzah. Dirt, earth, is muktzah machmas gufa. It's just a clod of mass. It's not a clay. What about sand? Well, sand is dirt. Well, what about putting sand in a sandbox? Oh my gosh, I just changed sand. Magically, it turned into a toy. It turned into a child's plaything by putting it in a sandbox. That's an example of not altering, but designating, mentally designating. Well, yeah, I did more than mentally. I put it in a box. By designating this sand to be used as a sandbox for kids, that just made it mutter. That just changed the sand from being mukta machmas gufo to being a toy. And it is not mukta, like all toys are not mukta. So we have two ways to change a mukta machmas gufo: either designate it with your mind, and again, if you do choose that route, you have to designate it forever, not just for this Shabbos. And B, you could do an act of altering it, like painting a smiley face on your pet rock. Yes? I have good news for you. Snow is not muktzah whatsoever. Neither is rain. Nor is it nolad, those who know what nolad is. Snow is permitted to be touched, moved, eaten, drunk on Shabbos. The only thing I would advise you not to do, aside from eating yellow snow, for various reasons, especially if you live in New York City, is not to make a snowball, because when you smush it in your hands and you smooth it, that could be a different malacha, nothing to do with muktzah, of memachek, of smoothing. If you make snowballs before Shabbos and keep them in your freezer to throw at your roommates on Shabbos, that will be mutter. Well, even if you didn't have a designation, it would be mutter. Oh, destroying it. You were saying when you throw it. What would that be? That would be stira. That would be dismantling a building, dismantling a kli. That's called stira, the opposite of binyan. I don't know the answer. Yes.
But if snow melts and you drink it, isn't that a problem for water?
If you cause it to melt, that is a problem. But if you don't actively cause it to melt by banging it, that's not no luck.
So if you just have snow and a bowl and it melts?
That's the machlokas. We mikra hadin its mutter. We like being machmer, and that's why you see people who are very frum like putting a little water on the bottom of their bowl with ice so that when it melts it doesn't really just turn from solid to liquid. Mikra hadin, that's not necessary. If you want to be frum, which I urge, you could do that. Fine. That is the end of mukta machmas gufo. Yes?
I have a different question. You said to alter it, so...
Yes, like painting a smiley face on a rock is altering it.
I don't need any Pabbos on Shabbos. I just decided to paint a smiley face.
On Erev Shabbos. I don't know if you could do this on Shabbos. That is correct. If you have a rock that you painted, well, not just that you're just painting the dirt outside, if you painted it so that it could be something... But maybe you don't need the eternal designation. I'm not sure. But if you did some act to it, that itself will solve the problem. Yes?
If you have to designate for a painter as well, does that mean practically that you can't use it during
the week? No, you could use it every day to throw it at cars. Correct. Your kavan is that this is designated for whatever you designate at. Come Tuesday, you could designate it forever for something else, but at least this week, you designate it forever for this permitted purpose.
Mm-hmm.
You're saying if you designated it to do something that's usher on Shabbos, it doesn't help you. So if you designated it to break windows, it's equally problematic because it's designated to do something that's usher. That's a good point. Let's say you just designate it so that it will injure people. No, actually, I bet it's injuring people is also usher, equally usher, probably, perhaps usher midaraisa, to cause someone to have a black and blue mark on Shabbos. You can't, girls, I don't know if they do this, women, I don't know if they do this, but guys sometimes like to punch each other in the arm just out of friendship and love. If it is done in such a loving way that caused the black and blue mark, that might constitute an iser de araisa of inflicting a wound on a fellow Jew. In fact, if a person does that jokingly to his father, that might be chayav misa. We don't have beit din and we don't institute capital punishments, but that is something to be very aware of. For that reason, there's a well-known rabbi who will remain nameless right now who knows how to play ball, and his children all know how to play ball. And that very chashev rav is makpid that his children should always be on his team. God forbid he be on an opposite team and his son try to block his shot or reach for the ball and foul the father and cause the father black and blue mark, which would make the son, God forbid, chayev misa, which is not a good thing for various reasons. Okay, that is the end of Muktamach Maskufo. In terms of Muktzah Machmas Gufa. Now we're going to talk about a different kind of Muktzah that, does it appear on our little sheet over here? Yes, anyone still have this sheet? If you have the colorful sheet, if you do, could you send one to the front table? Okay, I'll pass it around. On the right column in the middle, we have a new kind of Muktzah called Muktzah Machmas Isser. Muktzah Machmas Isser. Let's first describe what it is. I have a suit that is shatnez. It's not that I didn't check it for shatnez yet. It's a suit that has shatnez. My question to you is, can you move it on Shabbos? What do you say? A shatnez suit. You say no. Do I hear a yes? It depends. That's always the right answer, right? That's a yes? Yes. Could you explain yourself? Why would you say that a shatnez suit can be moved? Okay, don't look at this sheet. This sheet this sheet only says a part of a story, so don't look at the sheet. I'm sorry, this sheet is not going to help me right now. Yes. There's no prohibition to own shatnez. There's no prohibition to dress your dog in a shatnez suit. There's no prohibition to get hanah from shatnez. You're just not allowed to wear it in a way that warms you. So Liora is making a very good point. You could use it as a rag. You could use it for all kinds of other things. You're saying, but that's not what a suit's made for. A suit's made to wear. So you're actually both right. Not that it depends, but you're both right. The Shulchan Aruch brings two opinions. Shulchan Aruch, in Hilchos Shabbos, Shin Ches 308-47, says, Yesh Osrim L'Taltel Beged Shatnez. There are those who prohibit moving around a piece of clothing that's shatnez. V'yesh Matirim, and then those who permit it. Let's understand the two sides here. Why is it going to be permitted? That's the easier part to understand. It's a jacket. You're right, a Jew is not allowed to wear this jacket, both on Sunday, Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, Friday, as well as on Shabbos, but it's still a jacket. It didn't become not a jacket, so it's a kli. It's a kli. Is there anything Shabbos-dick wrong with this jacket? Nothing to do with Shabbos, it's a kli. It doesn't lose its name kli because I can't wear it. So it's a kli that there's nothing prohibited about Shabbos using it. It's not like the rabbis have to make a special gzeira that I shouldn't move it around because lest I come to do something prohibited on Shabbos. During the week, on Tuesdays, anyone going to tell me that a shatnez jacket is muktza? No one here would say that. So why is Tuesday different than Saturday? In terms of Hilchas Shatnez, it's not. So if on Tuesday the rabbis didn't want to make it Muktzah, why should they, yes, make it Muktzah on Shabbos? That's one side of the coin. The opposite side of the coin, and listen very carefully, because this is a little bit nuanced. This is what the Shulchan Aruch HaRav says, that's the Baal HaTanya, the first Lubavitcher Rebbe, was, besides being a person who is, I guess, one of the founders of Chassidus, he happened to be a gigantic world class, and when I say world class, I mean like really, really world class. Gadol in Psak in Halacha, he was one of the greatest poskim of that generation. In the Shulchan Aruch HaRav, the Rebbe writes that, why are you calling this a kli? A jacket is a kli, but this is not a jacket for somebody who's Jewish. Physically it looks like a jacket. Physically it feels like a jacket. But if you put on your religious glasses, you're just going to see a piece of fabric. You're not going to see a jacket because it can't be worn, ever. So halachically, why are you looking at this like a jacket? It's not considered a kli. It's not a utensil. It doesn't have a use. A kli is an object with a defined use. For a religious Jew, this object does not have a defined use. And therefore, it's not considered a kli, halachically. And therefore, if what something's not a kli, it's just a mass of stuff. A mass of stuff without a defined use is called what in Hilchos Shabbos? Muktza, machmas, gufo. And therefore, cannot be moved neither for its location nor for an alternate purpose. It's muktza entirely, and this is how we paskin. So halacha l'maisa, we do paskin, even though it's two opinions in the Shulchan Aruch. The Mishnah Berurah says that we are machmir, like the first opinion, that a shanis piece of clothing, again, not that you haven't checked it for shanis yet. I just bought some stuff on the Black Friday, you know, Black Friday sales, some online clothing shopping, and it got sent here this week, and I got sent half my shipment, not my second half. So I don't want to go to the shanis person twice. So I'm just waiting for the rest of it to come. So I didn't check it for shanis. Does that mean it's muktzah? No. I'm talking about something that's really shanis. Halacha l'maisa, it will be muktzah. Why? Listen carefully. That's what we call muktzah machmas iser. Muktzah machmas, it's muktzah because of the iser of shanis that is sitting atop this jacket. And the way the Shulchan Aruch HaRav, the first Lubavitcher Rebbe explains muktzah machmas iser, and this is the nuanced point, is that halachically it loses its name, its identity as a kli, it loses its purpose, and it becomes nothing more than a mass for a religious Jew, a mass that you can't use. That's muktzah machmas gufa. That's like a rock, that's like a stick, that's like a leaf, and therefore it's going to be muktzah entirely. Let me give you one more example before I take questions. Did any of you ever, and I'll clarify what I'm saying, not on Chol Hamoed, on Yontif itself, find a piece of chametz? Did you ever like, you know, you're playing with your younger brother and like the dice rolls under the couch and you push the couch to the side to get the dice and oh my gosh, there's like a Cheerio there. Did that ever happen to any of you? Oh wow, those are scary situations. Yeah, okay, so we won't talk about that. But yeah, that could be. You have to not be kona, be mafke. Okay, so what happens? Halacha l'maisa, you find a piece of chametz in your house. You go through that drawer, right? It's warm and sunny, so you go through your like summer clothing drawer that you haven't looked through in the past 4, 5, 6, 7 months. And on the bottom of that drawer, as you're reaching for that, you know, that lighter sweater for the nice spring day that Pesach brings, you discover in the pocket was that granola bar that you just didn't eat on Sukkot when you went on the Sukkot trip. So what do you do with that? Destroy it immediately, right? Flush down the toilet, right? Yes or no? You can't burn it. It's Yontif. What do you do with it? Cover it. Hide it. Those are two very different things. Why? One is moving it. One is mukta. That is correct. Says the Shulchan Aruch in Hilchos Pesach. Okay, we're not in Hilchos Shabbos anymore. Hilchos Pesach, Tuf Mem Vav, 446. The first Seif, the title of the siman is, what do you do if you find chametz on Pesach? That's the title of the siman, I mean. Hamotze chametz beveso. Somebody who finds chametz in his house. So if it's Chol Hamoed, take it out immediately and burn it. V'im hu yom tov, like you said, Arian, yichpe alav kli, cover it over with a kli, until nighttime, until Yontif is over, and then destroy it. Why? Shelo yuchal letaltelo, because you're not permitted to handle it on Yontif. Why not? Why can't I handle it? It's edible. It's food. Even edible for an animal, certainly. That's what we're talking about. It's muktzah machmas iser. It's muktzah because of the iser that the way, again, the Shulchan Aruch HaRav will explain, the Baal HaTanya will explain, the fact that our religious compunctions, our religious eyesight looks at this piece of Cheerios, at this donut, with a different perspective. We look at it as just a mass of something that's unusable because of my halachic binds. So that's going to make it muktzah, that's going to make it like a stick, like a stone. It'll be muktzah machmas gufo. Now, any questions about this new category called muktzah machmas iser? Yes. Correct. It's a new classical muktzah machmas gufo is a stick, a stone, a rock. A stone and a rock are the same thing, right? And here, because of the iser involved with the shatnez coat and with the chametz, it becomes like a rock. So it's like an application of muktzah machmas gufo. Okay, let's talk about that right now. That's the next thing on my list. What about non-kosher food? Non-kosher food. So, we have to think for a moment. In order for something to be... We talked about like raw food. We talked about raw potatoes last week. We talked about raw noodles. We talked about raw meat. What about, let's say... Well, let's start like this. What about dog food? Non-kosher dog food. Is that going to be muktzah on Shabbos? Which one of us, who has a dog here? Okay, how come you didn't raise your hand before when I asked you as a pet? Okay, that's okay. I hear, okay. I hear that, okay. So is dog food muktzah on Shabbos? Dog food is certainly not muktzah on Shabbos. Why not? It's not edible for a human. The answer is, food doesn't have to be edible for a human. It has to be edible for whatever animals are in this area. Again, in Washington Heights, those are dogs, cats, and cockroaches. Somebody said they had a chicken walking around there. Right? Somebody said they saw a chicken walking around Washington Heights recently. Okay, for chickens. If you live, not mice, yes, certainly. If you live upstate somewhere, or like, I don't know, in Philadelphia or Silver Spring, then maybe you have cows also. But that'll, so therefore, hay, if you live upstate, hay will not be muktzah. If you live in Washington Heights, hay, which is eaten by cows, will be muktzah. Depends on the animals that are around. So therefore, you asked me about non-kosher food. Is non-kosher food edible for a dog? I assume so. For a cockroach, definitely. For the mice we have over here, definitely. So therefore, non-kosher food is mutter to use. It is not muktzah. Why isn't it accessible? You're saying a dog can't access it? What about you giving it to a dog? I don't think that would change anything. That's a different, however we deal with that, with other things, yeah.
But even if you don't own a dog,
that is correct.
Dogs are
right.
Okay.
Yes.
Yeah, why do we use, for inedible food, why do we use whether or not animals can eat it and not humans when animals themselves?
That's a good point. Because... why are things muktzah? What does the word muktzah mean? So we explained the very first time that muktzah means something that is pushed away from my mindset, my Shabbos mindset. So things that are inedible on Shabbos, like raw meat, A, it's inedible as it is. And I can't do anything on Shabbos. On Yontif I could cook it. On Yontif it's not muktzah. But on Shabbos I can't do anything about it. So it's, what's the point of it in terms of me? I can't do anything with it. There's nothing in it for me. So I just mentally push it away. That's what muktzah means. Muktzah means I pushed it away mentally. So if something is edible for animals in this area, for my dog or for my next door neighbor's dog, so I don't have that pushing away, that mental pushing away, because it's not something worthless or useless. It is something that is worthwhile and useful. That's the reason.
For something that is muktzah.
I'm sorry?
For it's useful for something.
Oh, you're saying that dogs themselves are muktzah.
Yeah.
Oh, I didn't realize that. Well, that you're asking a different question. You're asking, can I move something for the sake of a muktzah item? That's a different application of what you're asking. We're not going to talk about that.
Why we use that as the basis for our understanding of inedible objects when they themselves are merciful.
Because they're little people too. We care about them. Right? We love our dogs, don't we? Okay. Let's talk about treif pots. Give me 1 minute, then we'll come back. Treif pots, treif silverware. Are they muktzah? What do you say? Who says yes? Who says they're muktzah? Treif silverware. Who says they're not muktzah? Okay, let's follow the same logic. Just like we said, you could have non-kosher food that can be used for an animal, so too you could take a treif bowl and put your dog food in it. You could take a treif fork and hand your dog or your next door neighbor's dog or the dog downstairs a bite of his food. So therefore, non-kosher treif pots and silverware will not be muktzah. That's if it's possible and feasible for you to feed a dog with them. If there's the way they're configured, they're not going to be able to be, you know, saucers for a dog or a cat to drink their milk or water. It will be muktzah. Yes. Right, but I could still stick a piece of fork into a piece of chicken and hand it to a dog. You're right, that's not normal, that's not how they eat, but I guess if dogs wouldn't eat like that, then it would be muktzah, you're right. You have to evaluate each one based on the animals that you have around there. That would be true. Yes? That's an excellent question. The Shulchan Aruch Rav asks you a question. He says, even though you could use a shatnez jacket, for example, to cover over things like kalim or dogs, or to hold on top of your head so that you don't get all wet. However, since that's not the purpose of a jacket, that won't make it bad. Again, how did we explain shatnez jacket? We said a shatnez jacket, since shatnez prevents me from using it, it becomes not a kli anymore. It loses its identity as a useful item. Oh, but ask you and ask the Rebbe that I could use it as some other kind of kli to cover things over, to keep my doggy warm. However, that's not what it was designated for. That's not what it was manufactured for. So even though you could figure out some other permitted use of it, that's not going to that's not sufficient enough reason to make it turn it back into a kli. It's a jacket. If it can't be used as a jacket for religious reasons, that means it's lost its designation halakhically as a jacket. On some level, yeah. Excellent question. Okay, that is the end of Muktzah Machmas Isser, which, as we said before, is a subcategory and application of Muktzah Machmas Gufa. Yes? Excellent question. Basar B'chalav is Asr B'hana'ah. That's what you're asking, right? Since it's Asr B'hana'ah, maybe it's worse than regular food. That, I think, would be correct. Let's say I have food that's just not kosher. So, stam not kosher, like nevela, right? Just, let's say you have meat for the dog. So that's horse meat. So you're allowed to derive benefit from horse meat. You're allowed to feed it to your animals. You're allowed to sell it. You're just not allowed to eat it. So horse meat is not going to be muktzah. But you're asking, basar b'chalav is not only asr to eat, it's also asr to derive any benefit. You're not allowed to sell milk and meat. You're not allowed to use it to keep you warm, or if you could figure out a way to do that. You're not allowed to derive any benefit from basar b'chalav. So according to our understanding, things that you cannot derive benefit from, and dogs can't eat, and I can't feed my dog basar b'chalav, will be muktzah machmas gufo. That is correct. Excellent point. That's what I meant. It's muktzah machmas isser, which will therefore turn into muktzah machmas gufo. Thank you. That's correct. Okay. So, in my notes, I prepared something a little different. I don't know if we'll talk about it right now. I just want to give you something to think about. While we're on the topic of muktzah, things being muktzah because of an isser involved with them, which I just sort of explained, that's going to make them not into utensils anymore, and they're going to be muktzah machmas gufo. I just want to sort of go on a tangent for about maybe 2 minutes and talk about some other things on Shabbos that because I can't do them, the thing becomes muktzah. But it's not really going to be muktzah machmas gufo. I'll just give you 2 examples. I'm not going to go into it. Let's talk about reading materials that I can't read on Shabbos. So, for example, Wall Street Journal has how many sections on a weekday? Okay, the first one is? The news. You're allowed to read news, I hope, I think, maybe. Okay, let's assume you could read news on Shabbos. What's the second section? Marketplace. Is it money and markets or marketplace? Money and markets. Money and markets you cannot read on Shabbos. So if you get a subscription to Wall Street Journal, so the first section is, I'm not talking about if it came on Shabbos. Let's assume Friday's edition. You want to read it Friday night after the meal. So the first section is fine. The second section, money and markets, is business-related stuff. And you're not allowed to read business-related stuff, midrabanan. There's a takanah drabanan called shtarei hedyotos, which literally means documents of a plebeian, of a simple person, but it doesn't just mean simple person, it means any documents that relate to financial dealings, including contracts, including receipts, including anything financial, all those, and including Wall Street Journal Money and Markets, that's a financial book or document, that will be usher to read. We didn't talk about Muktzah yet. We're talking about an Issur Drabanan to read them. Once these things are usher to read, my second question will be, is it also therefore going to become Muktzah to handle? Okay, just saying that it's usher to read means I can't read it, right? I can't read it. So I'll hold it like this and I'll do whatever I want with it. But once I say it's Muktzah, that's a different story. So, let's add one more example. What do I do with a telephone book? Nowadays we just look up soup paper pages online, but in the olden days, how did people like a few years older than us use telephone books? I also used to use them. So how do you use a telephone book? You open it up and you look up a telephone number. And what do you do with the telephone number that you find? You dial it. You're not allowed to do that on Shabbos. So I would say using a telephone book is something that you use for Issur. Would you agree? Would you not agree? The primary purpose of a telephone book is to do things that are prohibited on Shabbos. Okay, so that's where we're going to go. So that's going to be, and if I'm not mistaken, the Rabbi Bodner in Hilchos Muktzah gives that specific example. This is a situation where I have a kli. A book is a kli. A magazine is a kli. A newspaper is probably almost sort of a kli, let's say, maybe. Maybe not, but maybe. And it's used for primarily Issur purpose. So that's going to be like a kli shemalach tola Issur, which I'm allowed to use either for its location or for an alternate use. What's a wonderful, wonderful alternate use of a telephone book? As a booster seat. Or what the Rabbi Bonner's book does not mention, I think is correct, I hope it's correct, because I have been relied on this, is to look up an address of the friend that you want to visit a few blocks away. Is there anything usher about having the address? The phone number, yes. You're going to do Issur with that. But the address, looking up an address of your friend who you want to visit on Shabbos afternoon or Yom Tov afternoon, there's nothing usher about that. That's an alternate use of a book that's primarily used for telephone calls, which is usher. So that's an alternate use of a kli shemalach tola Issur that would be okay. We're not going to talk about things like mail tonight, mail that came on Shabbos, only because I didn't look at research it sufficiently. We're not going to talk about other kinds of documentation, but just keep in mind things that are related to business are muktzah and therefore should not be moved on Shabbos. Yes?
So when you're talking about business-related
stuff, is it only business-related, like, let's say it's talking about stocks and you are invest, or like a merger and acquisition of a business, that's just of interest, but like it has absolutely no effect on you? Let me tell you a little bit more about this Issur, and maybe together we could figure out an answer. Maybe at least we could realize what the question is a little more. Why is it usher to read documents on financial documents on Shabbos? So you're assuming, because you're going to, right? I tell you, Facebook is putting out an IPO of a $10 billion IPO in the next few weeks. So you hear about that. Wow, they're valued at $100 billion, $10 billion up for sale. Let me get in on it now because it's going to, explode. So I read that shop Friday night. Monday morning, I call my broker. I say, when that Facebook IPO comes available on the market, I want, you know, $5 million worth, please. So now that's definitely usur. But it's a lot more than that. There are two reasons why these documents are usur. This is the Mishnah Berurah, Siman Shin Zayin, which is right before the main siman about Muktzah. The Mishnah Berurah writes that there are two reasons why documents, financial papers are Muktzah. One is a gzeira that you might erase. You have a contract, you have a deal, you have a receipt, you have an order for your business, something, a merchandise inventory, you might come to erase it. Then there's something else. The pasuk, I forgot where, please help me. Daber davar, mitzoh chavtzecha, daber davar, where's the pasuk? Yishayahu, thank you, talks about dinim drabanan, not drabanan, a high-level drabanan that appear in Tanakh, in the Nevi'im, where the Navi tells us that Shabbos is supposed to be a day that our walk is not the way we walk on weekdays, our speech is not the way we speak on weekdays, our dealings are not the way we deal on weekdays. And therefore, that would be a second reason. Dealings, again, are just mitzocha fatzecha, are the way we deal with things. And business is incorporated in that. So therefore, these documents, forget about that I might actually do a business deal, but just reading these kinds of documents is a not Shabbos-tika thing to do, and therefore it actually halachically is going to become usur. So that's one area where the concept of not Shabbos dik becomes actual halacha, in that pasuk of mitzoh chafetzecha, that your dealings have to be dealings of Shabbos. Okay, let's put that aside. That was just a side point, a tangent. Let's come back to regular hilchas muktzah. I want to talk about one final topic this evening. I don't think we'll get to the second. The final one. We'll talk about one final one. Yes. Right. So I would say, let's talk about something. Let's say you're reading a magazine that you like to read on Shabbos, right? We all like to read Mishpacha magazine. Can we all agree to that, right? Mishpacha magazine is our favorite magazine of all time? Okay, so we agree on something. Now, Mishpacha magazine has 10% off on the next Shetel sale. Thank you. Okay. So, as you can all tell, I could use a little bit of a shetel here. And 10% off, so is that going to make it muktzah? Of course, it's not going to make it muktzah because it's not the main part of the magazine. Should I be reading that part? No. The actual ad, if I'm just reading it because I find it humorous, then that might be different. But if there's any interest at all, or if it's something that I'm in the market for, that should not be read on Shabbos. Okay? I think you would be able to, because at worst, the money and market section would be a klisha malach to le'isr. And klisha malach to le'isr, you're allowed to move for its location. And I need its location. I need the paper, the sheet right behind it, right in front of it. So you would be able to. Okay, let's start a totally new topic, sort of, almost. Let me tell you a story that appears in the Gemara. This part of Hilchos Muktzah is the queasiest. If anybody has a delicate stomach, they're welcome to leave now. And I won't hold it against them. Tashma, come and listen to the following story. A certain achbarta, who could tell me what the word in Aramaic achbarta means? A mouse. A certain mouse was found in the besamim house of Rav Ashi. I don't know what a besamim house is. Maybe it's a besamim holder. Either way, a mouse is found. Rav Ashi said to the people in his house, "Nakta b'tzutzitza, hold it by its tail, and take it outside." That's the topic we're going to talk about. Things that are repulsive. Things that are disgusting. Didn't say if it's alive or dead. Let's assume it's dead. We're going to talk about things that are disgusting. This topic is called Muktzah Machmas. How do we say disgusting? Ew. How do we say that in Hebrew? Ew. Thank you. Ma'us, mi'us, it is mi'us. Muktzah machmas mi'us. Even if you speak Svaradit, it will be muktzah machmat mi'us. It's a samach, not a tav. Muktzamach masmias, mias is disgusting. So I just told you a case that Rav Ashi said you could carry the mouse, but let's go one line before that in the Gemara. The Gemara in Beitza, Daf Lamed Vav, says the following. Let's say we have a bedpan, right? Some people are nurses and they have to deal with bedpans regularly. Sometimes people are sick or a relative is sick and they have to deal with a bedpan that has human excrement, doesn't have to be human, excrement sitting in a bedpan. Says Shmuel, if you have a bedpan, whether it was from bowel movement or from urine, you're allowed to take it out to the garbage on Shabbos. But when you bring the bedpan back in, you're not allowed to carry it in. Unless you sort of figure out some other way, ploy, to get it back in, like put something mutter inside of it and carry the mutter thing inside of it. So how come I could take it out, but I can't take it in? If you tell me it's muktzah, bedpan is muktzah because it's disgusting, so I can't move it. If you tell me that just because it's disgusting, that doesn't make it muktzah, so just like you took it out, bring it back in. Why do we have a double standard? This Gemara tells us two halachas. First of all, things that are disgusting are muktzah. A. B. Things that are disgusting, which are muktzah, have a special leniency because of, we'll see why in a few minutes, that you could take them away from where people hang out. So it's sort of a double-edged sword. The fact that they're disgusting makes them muktzah. But the fact that you can't deal with being with that kind of repulsive thing also gives you permission to take it outside. So therefore, let's discuss what the Gemara just said. You have a bedpan that's used. There's repulsive material inside a bedpan. So, it's muktzah. You can't take it out and you can't take it in. Oh, but there's a second halacha that says that we'll see why soon, that for whatever reason, to avoid being near people and to avoid repulsing people, you are allowed to move it away. So what comes out? You could take it outside and empty it. Once it's outside, could you take it back in? No. You cannot take it back in. Why? Because it's outside in a place where there are no people being repulsed by it, so you're back with its status of muktzah. Oh, but I need it. The person in bed needs it. So you have to figure out a ploy to get it back in. Put some permitted item into it and bring it back in, sort of as though it's carrying the permitted item. So let's sum up what we have here. We have a halacha called muktzah machmas mias. Muktzah machmas mias means things that are repulsive are muktzah. They cannot be moved. I'll give you some examples. Dirty diapers. Tomato that's smushed on the floor. A moldy cucumber in the bottom of you open up the refrigerator and on the bottom you like get a tomato and light. Are there any more tomatoes? And you look on the bottom and oh my gosh, 4 weeks since that cucumber was there and it was a little moldy when you put it in the first part. Dead bugs, a smelly garbage can, all those things are muktzah. So you can't move them, right? However, we'll see in a moment why. When these things are near people and you want to get it away from being near people because it's very unpleasant, you have a special leniency to move them away from people. You can't move them around other than away from people. So, let's talk about a dirty diaper in your living room or a dead bug in your living room. So it's repulsive. You could take it with your hand and move it wherever you want. Move it away. Throw it outside. Take it outside. What about a dead bug or a dirty diaper in a backyard? And you're not having shalosh shudis in the backyard. It's just in the corner of the backyard. It's muktzah. Is it repulsing anybody? There are no people hanging out there right now. You will not be able to move it. So if you find a cockroach in your living room or in your kitchen, you can take it out with your bare hands on Shabbos and throw it somewhere else. If you find a cockroach in the backyard or in your garage, let's say a detached garage, and no one's really in that garage. You just went there to get something. You saw a cockroach there. It's repulsive to you, but there are no people around. So it's not really repulsing anyone. You cannot move that cockroach.
Only dead, right?
What? That is correct. But live, we talked about, I don't know, you're saying a live cockroach will also be repulsive to us. That's true. I wonder at the time of Chazal, they assumed that live animals were repulsive, like bugs and stuff. I don't know. I'm not sure. Good question. I don't know the answer. I don't know. Let's talk about something a little more in the middle. Hold on, please. Let's say I have a smelly garbage can. Now, we all live in Washington Heights, and we have apartments. And I don't know about you, but right down the hall from my apartment, I have a chute. Put the garbage down the chute, and it slides down to the abyss, and we never see it again. We don't know. Perhaps we don't even care what happens to it. But I do know that it's smelling up my, this garbage bag is smelling up my apartment. So I have a few options. I could leave it where it is, but that's not pleasant for me and my family. I could just leave it outside my front door in the hallway, and I'm perfectly fine, except for the people down the hall from me. Or I could put it down the chute where it should go. So let's say it's, you know, 11:45 at night, Friday night, and I'm exhausted, and I'm already wearing my pajamas, and I realize that I have this smelly garbage thing. So I don't really want to go out into the hallway, down the hall, and put it down the chute. Somebody might catch me in my pajamas, and that will look funny. So I decide I'm just going to sort of deposit it outside my door. So it's out of the house. If there are bugs that will come or mice will come, they're not coming to my house. Tomorrow morning, I get up, get dressed, I'm ready to go to shul, and what's sitting outside? The garbage that I plan to take to the garbage chute. So now wait a second. This garbage was a smelly garbage, it was repulsive, it's muktzah. I had a heter to take it out of my house and remove it from my house, which I did. But once it's in the hallway, no one's living in the hallway, such that I'm now allowed to remove it and put it down the chute. Maybe it's like a backyard where, or a garage where people aren't hanging out, and I'm not going to be able to take it and move it because it is muktzah. It's muktzah, but it has a heter to remove from people because it's unpleasant. So here, if you look carefully, the Magen Avraham is one of the commentators on the side of the Shulchan Aruch. Magen Avraham on Simon Shin Ches writes something that will answer our... Does everyone hear the question, by the way? I'm in a bind. I removed the garbage from where people are, and now it's a place where people aren't, so I can't move it anymore. But there are people passing by. So Magen Avraham says that if it's a backyard, you cannot move it. You have to leave it there. However, he says, if it's in a, he's not talking about a hallway, he's talking about a side street where people walk by, it is permitted to move away. I would suggest, based on that, that your hallway is no different than a side street where people walk by. If there are other people on your floor and people are walking down your floor and the sun's disgusting on your floor, meaning on the hallway outside your apartment, I believe, based on this Magen Avraham, it will be permitted to lift it up Shabbos morning when you're fully dressed and throw it down the chute. Okay, let's finish this idea up with the answer to why am I allowed to move these repulsive things if they're actually muktzah.
Is it an objective thing
Thank you. This is not objective. The poskim say that this is not objective. This is completely subjective. What is fine for me could be absolutely disgusting from you. Like, let's say you were born and bred in Washington Heights. So cockroaches are like, I won't say they're like licorice, but they're like, you know, they're playthings. You know, in some neighborhoods they raise like matchbox cars. In some neighborhoods they, you know, collect salamanders. In Washington Heights, kids who grow up here, we collect and raise cockroaches. All of you who come from wherever you guys come from, you're like, oh my gosh, it's a cockroach, I have to get out of here and move away. So that is going to be completely dependent on your upbringing and your personal, and that of your family. And we'll talk about another application of that. But why am I allowed to move these things if we're saying that they're muktzah? Let me tell you a very interesting halacha. Again, a little bit queasy, but this is what the halacha states. The Shulchan Aruch says, in Simon Shin Yud Beis, let's say a person goes to the bathroom, and you have to imagine going to the bathroom where we didn't have bathrooms. Think back a few hundred years, you go to the bathroom in the field. And they didn't necessarily have tissues. And even if they had tissues, maybe they didn't have an Erev. So you're going to the bathroom somewhere in the field. Says the Shulchan Aruch, Mishum Kavod Habrios, human dignity, hitiru, they permitted lataltel to handle avanim, rocks or stones, likaneach, with which to wipe. Why? Because moving stones, muktzah, is only an iser derabanan, umishum kavod habrios, and for human dignity, hitiruhu, they permitted it. In other words, you could take things that are muktzah, like if a person is caught, you're on a Boy Scout or a Girl Scout Shabbaton in the middle of nowhere, and you don't have any tissues, and you're in a field, and all there are leaves. We know leaves are muktzah. The Shulchan Aruch here in Shin Yud Beis says leaves can be used to wipe after a person goes to the bathroom. What do you mean, but they're muktzah? The answer is yes, they're muktzah, but there's a special heter for human dignity that allows muktzah to be moved. Because who made this Isser of muktzah? The rabbis. The rabbis wouldn't want to make an Isser, a prohibition, that would violate human dignity. So just like a person can wipe with things that are muktzah, so too, say all the achronim, this idea of what we were talking about for the past 10 minutes of things that are repulsive. You have a dirty diaper, you have a smelly garbage can, you have a moldy cucumber, all those things. Those things, in the presence of people, it violates their sense of human dignity. It's unpleasant, it's repulsive, it's smelly. And therefore, the halachas of muktzah will not apply, will be suspended, in as much as these disgusting things are violating my human dignity and my sense of, you know, being a mensch. That's the reason why we have this special heter. Because the halachas of muktzah are suspended for human dignity. Could I apply it to like whenever I'm embarrassed about something, all of a sudden muktzah doesn't apply? No. Specific applications that the achronim have set up. Yes. That they'll need a second time? That's a good question. I have to think about that. I'm not sure. Tamar? Okay, excellent. Let's say you have a pot, and there are different kinds of dirty pots. There's a dirty pot that has like some, let's say just the bottom of a chalan pot. It's hardened. It's like ugly. I wouldn't call it disgusting. Then you have like the bottom of the chicken pot that's like full of the chicken jelly, and that could be more disgusting. So again, is that chicken jelly muktzah? Like, will a dog eat it? If a dog would eat it, that's not muktzah, not to talk about. Oh, but you're saying, but the pot is, the pot might be muktzah for a different, oh, you're saying the pot is muktzah because it's a klishem lachtel iser, because you're cooking it. So pot is muktzah, but it's muktzah that is foul, it's repulsive. I would agree with you, yeah. I would say it's no different than a dirty diaper, which is completely muktzah, and you're allowed to take it away. You could take that pot out of the kitchen and put it on the back porch. I don't know where you're going to put it.
In an oven.
That sounds mutter to me if it's repulsive. But you have to be honest. That's not just like ugly. It's like, and again, it will depend on who you are and, you know, does it smell, does it not smell, and how much of a delicate person you are. Yes. For them, yes. But if they're not here, no. I think. I'm not sure. I think so. Yes. No, because the poskim specifically talk about a wife thinks that something is disgusting, so could the husband move it? So yes. When's tomorrow? Oh. Hold on 1 minute, please. We'll talk about that. Yes. Yes. So that's going to be muktzah, and you cannot move it because there's no human dignity that's being violated. Me, it's right next to your tomato patch. I'll tell you the honest truth. It's going to be very good for your tomatoes. Full of nitrates. That also. that's a hard. Okay, so that's where you have to sort of split between being somebody who's a neat freak and somebody who's, you know, if it's where people are, then you have the right to be a neat freak. If it's where people aren't, so just walk away. The fact that you know that in your backyard there's something disgusting, I'm not sure about that. I don't think we suspend muktzah for the dignity of an animal. It's probably just for human dignity. That will be a different halacha. If something's dangerous, that will be a halacha we'll talk about probably next week or the following week. Let me finish off with one final point, and then I'll take questions individually. A very important kula, very, very, very important kula, that's going to manifest itself in lots of different areas, and halacha l'maisa very significantly. I saw this in Rabbi Bodner's Hilchas Muktzah book, which is what I've used as an outline for most of what I've been doing. On page 265, he quotes both Rav Moshe Feinstein and Aram Shlomo Zalman the following. Let me give you two scenarios. I want to learn Friday night after the meal, but I'm tired, so I fall asleep. How do I keep myself awake? Does anyone know my trick?
Sunflower
seeds. Correct. I take my sunflower seeds and I just go at it. Hour after hour after hour. By the time I finished, my dining room table looks like a garbage can. So it doesn't particularly bother me. My wife, for whatever reason, it does bother. So now, if it's just that she's a neat freak, you know, okay, that's not what we're talking about. This is something that just looks very, a lot of them, and they're all over the place. In such a scenario, even though shells, inedible shells and peels, we said 2 weeks ago, are mukta machmas gufa and cannot be moved. Okay, well, how do you normally move them? Maybe you take a knife and you scrape it off. That's what we'll talk about in a week or so. But this halacha of being repulsive, if my wife thinks that there's a lot of them and they're really dirty and she's repulsed by it, say Rav Shlomo Zalman and Rav Moshe Feinstein, I'm allowed to take them with my bare hands and throw them out in the garbage. That's an incredible kula that applies to a lot of things that could be mukta. And if for somebody, for your mother, yourselves, whoever it will be, those things which are mukta can be moved, because again, this is not really repulsive. It's not repulsive. It doesn't smell, but it just makes a big mess. And listen to this. The way Ramosha says it is that it will be unpleasant. He's talking to a man who asked the shayla. It would be unpleasant for your wife if she would have guests. That doesn't mean that she wants to be neat. There's a difference. Being a neat freak, that's your problem. We're talking about something that is messy, is dirty, and would make you, not just because you want to show them that you're neat, but you would feel embarrassed that you're a dirty mess of a person if you would have guests. That scenario would be mutter to move with your bare hands. And that's, I think, a very important kula. We'll talk about general ways. Let me just tell you where we're going next week. Next week, we're going to do the last category of what is mukta, which is mukta machmas chisaron kis, valuable, delicate items. After that, we're going to start the best part of Hilchos Mukta, which is how do you move. Now that we knew what is mukta, which was the past, let's say, 4 weeks, next week, hopefully, we'll begin one or two sessions on how do you actually move all these things that we decided were mukta. So that's going to where all the kulas are going to come in. Have a wonderful evening. Anyone has questions, I'm happy to take them now.
Are we going to
Oh.